Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Finance Committee. Today is May 5th. It's 1:40 p.m. There's been a change in schedule. We're not going to hear Senate Bill 72, Community Revenue Sharing. With me today is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Dyson, Senator Elton. And we're going to have a public call-in on Senate Bill 53, the capital budget. And we'll be taking public testimony, depending on the amount of time and the length of the list. We'll try to keep comments to 2 minutes, make sure everybody has ample time to speak their mind. I do have a timer here, and we'll just kind of play it by ear. Right now, we don't have very many people on the list, so we can have some flexibility with that, as within reason. And with that, I'd like to go first to Wrangell, to Jeff Jabrush, if I'm pronouncing your name right, in the city of Wrangell.
Yeah, this is Jeff Jabrush with the city of Wrangell, and at this time, I have no comment. Thank you.
Okay. That's good news, I guess. We'll go to the Ketchikan and Gregory Vickery.
Thank you very much for taking my testimony today. My name is Gregory Vickery, and I'm the director of the Tongass Conservation Society based in Ketchikan. And I mostly want to talk about positive things this morning. I want to thank the drafters of the current document for including the $46.2 million to complete the Swantai Intertie. It's a project that's desperately needed here in Southeast and certainly for Ketchikan, and will enable us to do a whole sort of thing, a whole array of things with regards to development and potential cruise ship plug-in and those types of items. I also appreciate the fact that the current funding is independent of a tie into Canada, which we currently believe is an extravagance and not necessary for completion of the project. So the bottom line is, on this issue, I have to say that we agree with Senator Stedman that this is the most important current issue with regards to the capital budget for Southeast. I also want to say thanks for the $5.75 million appropriated for the replacement ferry between the airport on Gravina Island and the home island here of Revilla Gigedo in Ketchikan. Further thanks for the $3.34 million in the document for water treatment issues related to halocetic acid in the city of Ketchikan's wastewater treatment jurisdiction. It's also worth noting, and noting positively, I may add, that there's no funding for the Gravina Bridge project. And that's a good thing in light of the needs that we have here on the home island of Revilla related to repair and safety improvements for Tongass Avenue, not to mention significant backlogs of repair and maintenance needs around the state. And I will say that TCS, the Tongass Conservation Society, appreciates this display of fiscal conservatism. Lastly, I want to give kudos to the crafters of the current budget for including proper appropriations for the Fire Island Wind Project. I think that this effort will go a long way towards further legitimizing renewable energy in this great state. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Vickery. We'll go to Lois Epson, please, in Ketchikan.
Good afternoon. This is Lois Epstein. I'm the director of the Alaska Transportation Priorities Project. Unfortunately, since the document was not available on BASIS earlier, I'm actually still reviewing the document right now. I may or may not have comments later, so I'd appreciate, if at all possible, a chance later to provide some feedback. So right now I'm looking at the materials here in the Ketchikan LIO.
Okay, thank you. We'll go then to Mr. Ed Zastrow in Ketchikan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Ed Zastrow. I live at 3530 Denali Avenue, and I'm here speaking to the project in support of it, the $100,000 in the capital budget for access for the road to the Ketchikan senior housing development being planned. I'm speaking to you as president of local AARP. Our group is heading this project up with the volunteers. I would consider this a community project whereby the city of Ketchikan gave us a $7,000 grant 2 years ago to do a market study, which indicated we needed 10 to 12 senior housing units immediately. This past year, the City of Ketchikan once again gave another $20,000 grant to our group, at which time we have hired a developer, architect, and of course, the someone to come up with the cost of the project and the development of the housing. The other party involved in this, of course, is our Women's Auxiliary of the Pioneer Igloos. They gave us 11.2 acres of property to put the development on. We are extremely excited about this. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is on board with us, and we look forward to starting this project with the state's help in the summer of 2008. And once again, thank you very, very kindly, and it is a joint effort type of project. Lastly, but not least, the Swan Lake Tai'i Intertie, I can't say enough about that, and thank you very kindly. That being said, I will quiet down.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Zastrow.
Thank you.
We'll then go to Anchorage, to Mr. Steve Howell.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Steve Howell. I live at 1130 West 6th Avenue here in Anchorage, and I'm the Director of Public Outreach for Cook Inlet Regional Citizens Advisory Council. We're one of the two citizens advisory groups created by the Open 90. The mission of the council, of course, is promoting safe marine transportation and oil facility operations. I'm here to just really to express our appreciation to the administration's support of the funding allocation in the DEC FYOA budget toward a Cook Inlet marine traffic vessel risk assessment. This risk assessment is will really help identify gaps, safety gaps in Cook Inlet, and provide a solid reference for developing some prevention and response measures here. We've known for years that we needed a risk assessment, and Cook Inlet RCAC, they gathered a lot of that information during two navigational safety forums that we where we brought together a lot of different people, stakeholders, native leaders, state and federal elected officials, local concerned officials, Coast Guard, DEC, other federal regulators. The consensus from both of the events was a comprehensive risk assessment was really the critical first step in establishing additional spill prevention safeguards in Cook Inlet. And of course, no recent event underscored the need for that assessment better than the grounding of the Seabulk Pride back in February of 2006. The vessel had nearly 5 million gallons of heavy fuel on board, and it really threatened Cook Inlet, the environment and the economy on a scale that would rival the Exxon Valdez because of its location and the time of year. If you recall, of course, we had heavy, severe icing that year, and the environment, most responders know that kind of environment is it's difficult, if not impossible, to collect oil in heavy broken ice and extreme tides and currents like that. I also want to mention that the Triborough Commission, that is the of Municipality of Anchorage, Kenai, and Matsu Boroughs, endorsed the effort, as well as the Coast Guard, DEC, and legislators from the Peninsula and Kodiak as well. And lastly, $250,000 is really the state's endorsement of the plan. Most of the rest of the funding, of course, comes from the federal side, and Representative Young has been working with the Coast Guard to fund the rest of the assessment, and he emphasized the importance in a letter recently of the state's financial contribution toward the overall effort. He stressed that timing was really critical for our efforts to gain federal funding for the entire assessment. And so really, I just want to thank you for keeping that in the budget, including that, and I say that we really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Howell.
Thank you.
We will go to Charles France. This is S. Penn Hospital.
Yes, sir. Thank you for your opportunity to testify to you this afternoon. I'm Charlie Franz. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of South Peninsula Hospital here in Homer. I'm also a member of the local college advisory board for the Catchment Bay campus of the university, and I just wanted to thank you for your support of the university's capital request and the budget. Appreciate your help. We certainly need to grow our university so we can take care of all of the education needs and provide the workers that we need in the healthcare profession here in the state. And President Hamilton and the Regents have done a great job with helping to support those programs, and I appreciate your support for the university overall. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Franz. Go to David Solick, Bristol Bay Borough. Mr. Solick?
Sulak.
Yes. My name's David Sulak, and I'm the Bristol Bay Borough Manager. And I'd like to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 53, particularly the Port of Bristol Bay. As it sits right now, the Port of Bristol Bay is not included in the capital budget. And we are requesting some assistance to build or expand our port here. And the port's 25 years old right now, and it does have sheet piling in there. The problem is that the piling's starting to corrode, and also the facility's handling an increasingly heavier load. And with that, our port here handles everything in the region, in the eastern Bristol Bay and Lake Eliana communities, and basically it's about 21 communities that have their goods and pass through our dock here every year. And with the increased loading and everything else, we are getting into a situation where there's a possibility of the increased failure of the dock. You know, in 2005, the Corps engineers did conduct a survey with the fishermen, and they ranked our port as the number two in the highest facility that needed improvements. And at the same time, in 2005, Port of Bristol Bay was ranked eighth in the United States for commercial landing of fish, and we had 105 million pounds pass our dock worth $54 million. And in addition to that, we had another 70 million pounds of freight being handled by the port. So during 2005, we had 175 million pounds pass through our port. Right now, we're finishing up with the preliminary design and the design of the port improvement projects. And we do have roughly about $800,000 sitting readily available. We've also made funding applications to the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, EDA, as well as the Valley Commission. And also have talked to our congressional delegations for hopefully giving us some assistance there too. Like I say, what we're asking for, requesting, is help to further this project and get it done in a timely fashion. It's our goal to start construction next spring. And Bristol Bay Borough is committed to providing about 20% of the total construction projects. So we're going to be paying our more than our fair share, and hopefully that the state of Alaska and you gentlemen would be able to see fit that we would be included in Senate Bill 53.
Okay. Thank you for your
very much.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Go to Luke Hopkins, North Star Borough. Mr. Hopkins. And then following him, Tim Beck, the North Star Borough. Mr. Hopkins?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. I'm Luke Hopkins, presiding officer of Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, and I also am the vice chair of the Fairbanks Metropolitan Planning Organization, similar to AMAT. This is the FMAT for our urban area from North Pole to the west side of the university campus for road planning. I would like to thank you for including in the committee substitute the funding for the Esther Volunteer Fire Station, adding the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center funding, maintaining the Morris Thompson funding. I appreciate those and ask that you please keep those in the committee substitute. I would like to speak to the requests, both that the Fairbanks North Scarborough Mayor and our Assembly has requested for, and along with the school district, for a $2.5 million to be added to this committee substitute for the school kitchen relocation from Eielson Air Force Base to a location in the Railroad Industrial Yard, where we would be adding on to a school building facility. And the school buildings, of course, in the borough are borough assets. They're not owned by the school district, and this is this would allow us to move forward with that project. It's being required to be moved off of Eielson Air Force Base because of security reasons, so I ask you to strongly consider that. The BIOS funding, of course, our request was for $12.5 million to be able to start this project, even moving forward for UAF. It's an important project for our community. But I did also want to speak to our major road project. We've had this here for almost 35 years on our list, and slowly working through the design. And now, if we could get a funding request of $23 million added to the committee substitute for the capital budget, that would allow us to move this project forward over the next approximately 4 years to actually turn dirt and affect the transportation network for our whole Fairbanks North Scarborough area. The other item, our area road service funding request that we had in of $4 million, this would be used for those roads that are in subdivision areas. They're public roads, but in subdivisions. And of course, you probably have heard that there's a 107 road service areas, and they also tax their own properties. They, according to their votes in each service district, so each homeowner is contributing to their own maintenance on roads. And this this added amount of $4 million would allow them to play catch up on some of the major project lists that are throughout our subdivision areas. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions, and thank you again for this opportunity.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Hopkins. We'll now go to Mr. Tim Beck. Mr. Beck.
Yes, this is Tim Beck, and I live at 3470 Plaque Road, North Pole, Alaska. I, too, am on the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and I can make this very sweet because Mr. Hopkins just covered almost everything I think that we had on the list, and I want to thank you for your consideration, and I appreciate your efforts on our behalf, and Godspeed and good luck, gentlemen and ladies. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Beck, for your testimony. With that, we'll return to Ketchikan. Gretchen Klein, please.
Gretchen Klein, and today I'm in a new role now. I'm actually working at the hospital with the foundation, and I was really pleased to see that you guys had actually placed one of the items that it would be for the $48,000 for the replacement of the collator machine analyzer, actually, there, that the lab is in need of. And that actually gets just a huge amount of use every day there. And I think what's happened with that is that it's so old now, it's like 10 years old, and they really, it's not going to be able to be maintained. And so it's really important that they have it. We get, as you know, a lot of tourists down here on the cruise ships, and they're always using this machine. So anyway, I just wanted to put my 2 cents in for that, and I was really pleased to see that it was there. So good luck with the rest of the session.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. With that, let's bring forward from the audience Mr. Pete Kelly. Mr. Kelly, if you can identify yourself and who you represent. Well, you know the drill. You've been here many times.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pete Kelly, State Relations Director for the University of Alaska Statewide System. Mr. Chairman.
Mic. Pull the mic in.
Okay.
I don't want to miss anything.
Oh, boy, I bet not. Mr. Chairman, thank you, and to the members of the committee. There are some things in the capital budget that were badly needed, particularly some of the technical things that you always want to make sure are there, some of the receipt authority that we have to get from you to receive funds from federal agencies and even our own students and our own bonding authority, and those things were taken care of in the budget, and we do appreciate that. There is something that I just want to draw your attention to, and that is major maintenance. We've talked about it a little bit in some of the different offices, and I think we mentioned it in our presentation earlier on this year, but the university and the whole state has a major maintenance problem that's brewing. If you just look at the university's facilities, we have 6 million square feet of facilities, 300 buildings, and over $1.5 billion of facilities assets. And best practices requires that you use about 2.5% per year to fund your regularly scheduled major maintenance. And for an organization as large as the university, that's about $40 to $50 million per year. To be doing roof replacement, HVAC systems, and those kinds of major regularly scheduled maintenance things that keep buildings' useful life going. The university spends about $23, $24 million per year out of its operating budget to take care of the routine maintenance, the regular maintenance, the fixing things around the campuses. So we're committed to maintenance. But we have to come to the legislature in the capital budget for things that I have mentioned before, the roofs, the electrical systems upgrade, those kinds of things. The legislature hasn't had a history of funding those things on a regular basis, and that's been going on for quite a while. The problem is that when you need about $40 to $50 million per year to keep up, and what's happened over the last, since 2000, that the legislature has only spent about $7 to $12 million per year, some years nothing, it gets behind quickly. We're at about $500 million in major maintenance backlog that, again, we best practices probably would say that we should be at about $200 million. So there's a major maintenance problem brewing. We just would like to encourage you, Mr. Chairman, and the members of the committee to not only look at the university, but the entire state Department of Transportation, public facilities, which has about a $300 million backlog, perhaps four, to look at a comprehensive major maintenance funding plan for the future. And with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kelly.
We have a question.
Yes. Senator Olson.
Senator Kelly, of the 300 buildings that you talked about that are up for major maintenance, how many of those are owned by the university? How many are these?
We own almost all our facilities. We're not like the state. Yeah.
Okay. And on the leased ones, are you having to provide maintenance on those as well?
There are a few of those, so I don't honestly know on a case-by-case basis. I would imagine that it goes both ways.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Olson. Do we have an updated list by chance? With that, we'll stand at ease. We had Mr. Carl Rose come forward. He would like to speak on Senate Bill 53.
Thank you very much, Senator. Through the chair, and for the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. And I appreciate this opportunity. I put in a letter of request for the second year of funding of a four-year project, and that was the Consortium for Digital Learning. I didn't see it in the first draft of the working draft, so I thought I might come up and share with you one more time. We received $5 million last year, and this was an effort to take a look at digital learning in a more systemic fashion. What we have is we've got 18 school districts. This $5 million was spent in 18 school districts and 55 programs that talk about digital learning. This includes, and it's a solution that we've put in place that says we're not just going to buy hardware. We're going to look at hardware, software. But we want an emphasis on professional development, technical assistance, repair and replacement, as well as a a targeted performance-based contract to ensure that we move along the lines of digital learning and not just keyboarding and word processing. Our history has shown us that we've put money into technology, but without adequate support in terms of technical assistance and professional development, it's real easy to move towards keyboarding and word processing. The digital world is just a huge area of opportunity and advantage for young people today. It's where they live. And for us to be able to incorporate this into school districts, to cause school districts to invest their money in a different kind of way, with technology being the key, I think it's critically important. The design of this program is to provide two-thirds of the funding for a district's investment. If a district puts up $100,000, we'll match it with $200,000 to be able to provide this solution, not only for hardware, but to ensure that teachers receive the kind of professional development that they need, as well as the technical support to ensure that systems are working. Last year, we went with Apple Computer to design the first stage. We have developed a proposal that we have given to Dell, a PC vendor, who is coming online this year. If we receive this money on the 11th of May, we plan to have an organizational meeting that would bring another group of school districts on board in this, the second year. So I just wanted to stop in and put in a plug for the Consortium for Digital Learning. We did a report done in the Butchrovich room about a month ago. This is an exciting opportunity. There's 2,700 users, that's teachers and students, and the short-term return on this is huge. I mean, when you look at kids and how they learn today, the returns are phenomenal. And I think, I could put it best with a quote that was given from the alternative school right here. The principal of the alternative school here was somewhat hesitant to move into this area because she was uncomfortable with technology. In a review that we did with them, her comment was, we have landed on the beach and we're burning the boats because we're not going back. That's how dramatic a change has been made in terms of technology and digital learning, and we'd like this opportunity to this in the second year to spread it out to additional school districts around the state. It's a very brief comment on where we're going. I have an entire presentation, but I think that this is not the place to do it. But I wanted to stop in and just say a few words in favor of the Consortium for Digital Learning. So this would be a $5 million appropriation in this, the second year. And we put this in place for a four-year effort.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Rose. If you could leave, maybe Rose, could you pick up five or seven of those brochures, please?
If there are any questions, I'll try to answer them for you.
Okay.
Thanks.
We'll keep your request in mind, Mr. Rose.
Thank you very much.
With that, we'll stand at ease, waiting for the phone to ring. We'll come back on the record, please. From Fairbanks, Mr. Tim Beck. Mr. Beck, if you're online. Pardon me? Oh, excuse me, Dan Dunaway.
Yes.
If you could proceed with your testimony, please.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to comment. I'm specifically calling, I'm a member of the Friends of KDLG, and I've been an avid supporter of public broadcasting much of my life. I've lived in Dutch Harbor, Sandpoint, and have enjoyed what public radio provides us in the bush. And I would like to encourage you to support the capital funding request that the APBC has proposed for $400,000. I understand they're going to use this for kind of an engineering services program. A lot of these small stations don't have highly trained staff or people even in the communities that can help them. And on occasion. Recently, some of these stations have been off the air from anywhere from hours to several weeks, maybe possibly months, I think. They really need some help. The funding for public broadcasting has been flat for quite some time, which I'm sure you've heard amounts to a cut over a 10-year period. I believe KIAL in Unalaska was down or transmitting poorly for many months until they could finally get some engineering help. And so I'd sure appreciate it if you could include that budget request in your final budget recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunaway, for your testimony today. We are going to stand at ease. And have Betty Walters. Betty Walters, please.
Good afternoon. Through the co-chair to the Finance Committee. I'm Betty Walters, and I'm the superintendent of schools here on Kodiak Island, and you've heard from me previously. I just wanted to thank you for all the work that you are doing to support education. I'm very tuned into what is happening both in the Senate and the House, and hope that you will continue your work to provide the additional funding that we need for education. And really, I have absolutely nothing more to say, but thank you.
Okay, thank you. And we are working on that funding piece. I appreciate your comment.
No problem. Thank you. Have a nice day.
We'll go to Addie's.